and she's still able to come to parties at the tank? Then, when he looks at me, something like understanding dawns on his face. I don't answer. All I can do is look at Avon's face, watch, and imagine movement there. Then I'm no longer imagining it. Her eyelids flutter, just barely, I'm sure of it.
Feathers?
I say, bending closer. A tiny smile grazes her lips.
I ruined your night.
Her words are so quiet, I have to lower myself inches from her mouth to hear.
Shh,
I whisper, and I kiss her knuckles.
Are you mad?
No, no, no. Of course not, I tell her, even though I am, at myself.
Ren?
Avon tugs at the hem of my shirt, her breathing thin. I shush her, but it doesn't matter.
You think T-Bone could like me again?
She asks seriously, like her very life depends on the answer.
Even though I'm going to...
Hey, you're not going anywhere. And yeah, I think you and Tare would make an adorable couple. One final ding, and we're at sea level, the ground floor. Callum wheels Avon out of the elevator, into a shock of cool night air. I follow. Terrence and Derek wait for us there, pacing and arguing with each other. Finally, Derek calls out, covering the distance between us in only a few strides. It's been forever. Service elevators, Callum replies curtly, even though Derek wasn't talking to him. Looking at me, he says, we're going to Ward Hope. Hop in. He gestures to the hulking red marine transport that waits at the edge of the dock. We jog together, two of my steps matching one of his. Callum lifts the hatch, but Derek calls out, wait, just as I'm about to jump in. He runs to catch up, and when he's close enough, he leans toward me. Ren, I want to come with you. His eyes flick to Callum. Aren't you suspicious? Why is a West Isle doctor hanging around these parts? Why indeed? I thought I knew who he was. Now he could be anybody. I look down the hatch into the red emergency transport sub. There's barely enough room for Avon, much less Callum, me, and Derek. I don't know why he's here, I answer, speaking the truth. But trust this guy or not, I'm going with. So is Avon. Derek shifts his body slightly, covers the hatch of the submarine with his arm to stop me. Derek, I plead, and my voice breaks. I don't think you understand. I won't leave her again. For 3 years I've been leaving her, and this last time she almost... I don't finish the sentence. Never before did that reality seem so close. I never should have left her. Not ever. The words tumble out too fast. And then silence is the only thing to listen to. I'm about to cry. The muscles in my throat burn. I'm holding it back so hard. Derek brings his hand to his forehead, runs it through his hair, worry all over his face. Then, almost as though he needs it as much as I do, he folds his arms around me, resting my head against his chest. I'm too shaken by everything that's happened tonight to think about it, but dim recognition dawns that this feels natural, comfortable in a way it wouldn't have yesterday. I curl up against him, allowing myself just a few moments, and breathe him in. I also allow myself to believe that maybe he was telling the truth about Katana. I pull away before the thought lasts too long, no time to waste on me. See you at the hospital? The smallest movement, his fists balling up at his sides, makes it clear he doesn't like my leaving, but it also shows he's fighting to keep quiet, which means he understands. I hop down into the transport sub behind Callum, and when I lower myself into the cabin, the doctor's hands steady me by the waist. Your file didn't say you had a sister, Callum notes, as the sub sails through the underwater city. Always knew I had a file, but I don't like that this guy thinks he knows me because some lights on a screen gave him my stats. We're not blood, and anyway, it ain't your business, I say quietly, watching Aven. Bet the file didn't say a lot of things. My tone smarts in my ears. I'm being too harsh on him. It's just, small talk hurts more than silence. I'm sorry, I say into my hands. I'm sorry. Thank you. You know I mean thank you. I'm just... I cut myself off, choking the rest of the sentence by biting into my fist. You don't have to say anything. So I don't. And the only noise comes from the soft whooshing of the steam engine and Avon's air flowing in and out. As I press my forehead to hers, she reaches for my shoulder, clutches it tight. Too tight.
Where are you?
She rasps, too sudden.
Ren, where'd you go?
I get closer, leaning in so my face is clear in front of hers.
Right here.
I'm right here.
What's going on? Why can't she see me?
I ask Callum, all the fear racing back. Her brain is swelling, he answers. I gave her all the anti-inflammatory medication that the tank had on hand, but she needs more, soon.
Well, why don't you tell it to that guy?
I cry, waving my arm toward the driver. Callum pushes a red button on the side of the sub, which obviously means speed the hell up, because the driver suddenly grows a pair, and we're really moving. Aven smiles. It drops away too quickly. Her eyes roll back into her head again, and then fix on me.
Can we fly home now? I have wings, too, just like you. See?
She lifts her arms. This isn't one of her games. Why is she saying that? I'm trying to stay calm, but my heart becomes a wild animal, starts slamming against my ribcage like it wants out of my body, fast. My vision even goes black around the edges, and soon I'm looking at everything through a funnel of darkness.
Breathe.
You're no good to anyone if you pass out too. If only Derek or Tare could have come with us, this would be so much easier. Callum moves me aside and places a mask with a breathing tube over her face. She's hallucinating. The swelling is depriving her brain of oxygen. If we don't get her there fast... The sentence dangles there. But I know how it ends. Comatose. Chapter 16. 11:45 p.m. Saturday. Standing up. Sitting down. The waiting room is the color of old pigeon crud, white and yellowed and crusty, and I'm wondering if I can peel the paint off the walls. Biting my nails down to their beds. They took Aven away, wheeled her off into the great crap-colored yonder, and left me sitting here. Up. Down. No, wait. Pacing. Pacing is the way to go, most definitely. I keep moving to hold the guilt at bay. Every time I stop, I feel it closing in, and my eyes start to fill up with salt water. I go back to the moment at the racks when I give her the water. I rewind. Make the right choice. The smart one. The one that doesn't send Aven to the hospital. My mind tilts, and gravity no longer works like normal. I feel like I'm in a constant state of sideways free fall. So I keep myself moving. Read the signs around me. Anything to distract. Tacked loosely to the whitewashed walls, hang poster after poster, each one aiming to convince you to get tested. Are you experiencing shortness of breath? Have you blacked out with no apparent cause? Do you sometimes see blood when you cough? If so, you may have contracted hyperbacillic neoplasma contagion, or HBNC, and you could be contagious. Get tested. We can help. They leave out the bit where you could get arrested for transmitting it, of course. Which is impossible to prove, by the by, but the Blues don't care none. So long as someone's getting blamed, and it's not them, they're happy. If that's not incentive to find out you've got a deadly disease, I don't know what is. Minutes pass. Hours pass. Decades. And centuries. Where are the guys? Then it becomes universes and galaxies that pass. And with all this pacing, it's as though I'm running through the space-time continuum. But when I look up, nothing has changed. I'm alone. Alone. Soon enough, that's how I'll be all the time. I try and steel my mind to the thought, except my mind and body are on two different planets, so even if I harden one, the other is off doing its own thing. I'm so in my head I don't even notice when Derek and Terrence finally come bounding into the hospital. "Where is she?" they ask in unison, and when I look up, Derek walks close, too close, and pulls my hands into his. "What are you doing to yourself?" he asks. "Here, I thought I was keeping it together pretty well." "What do you mean?" He brings my hands in front of my face, shows me my bloodied nail tips, raw and red smeared. "Oh," I say, not really caring. I hadn't noticed.
"You need a Band-Aid," Terrence comments, running to a nurse behind the counter.
"Go wash the blood off," Derek tells me, putting his hand on my back and pushing me in the direction of the bathroom. I can't see why any of this matters. I go to the bathroom anyway. It's easier than thinking for myself. There's a rusty faucet in here, and even the hospital doesn't spill its filtered rainwater for visitors, just chlorinated brackish water. Only patients get fresh. The murk runs over my hands, mixing together with my blood, then whirlpooling down the drain. I wait to feel something, some pain to bring me back to myself. But I guess biting my fingernails wasn't enough, 'cause I feel nothing. That, or everything is shut down. I walk back to the waiting room and sit beside Derek and Terrence, all three of us quiet. After a few moments of the mind-numbing silence, Derek tugs my hands away again. I'm back to gnawing at my cuticles like they're dinner. "I can't help it," I growl, exasperated. "This is not the important thing that's going on right now." Derek won't let go of my hands, though. When I try and move on to chewing at the nail beds, since the nails are mostly gone, I meet his eyes and glower, yanking my hands. But with his solid as cement grip, it's useless.
"She needs you right now."
Our eyes are still magnets, mine angry and filled with venom, his weary, but calm. Polar opposites that can't let go of the other. And it occurs to me, those are the only words anyone could have spoken to me that might have had any chance at keeping me sane. Somehow he knew. He didn't tell me to calm down, or to relax. That would have just pissed me off. It's a comfort when someone knows you like that. Would I know what to say to him if the tables were turned? I quit the tug of war and force my hands to slacken, which is when I realize that Derek's holding them for good and he ain't letting go. I try not to focus too hard on what that means, or doesn't mean. A radio blares from the receptionist's desk, even though they've got hologram TVs overhead, cheaper that way, keeping the radio on for nighttime use. We've all fallen into a tense silence. So with nothing else to listen to, we're forced to hear news of yet another West Isle blight outbreak. Derek rolls his eyes in Terrence's direction, then opens his mouth to speak. The next piece of news stops him before he starts. "The West Isle citizens are even planning a rally. At dawn tomorrow morning, in front of Town Hall, individuals are encouraged to attend and voice their discontent with Governor Voss's inability to address the two major issues facing the United Metro Islets, a viable freshwater source and the spread of the HBNC virus."
"They're rallying," Derek says. "Things must be getting serious."
"A rally won't help nothing," I say. "You can't make water appear where there's none, and you can't disappear a sickness." Those last words make me queasy. For one perfect moment, I thought it was possible. A sickness just disappearing. Nothing's that easy. I knew nothing was that easy. Water can't heal. Especially not the water I found. It's dangerous. And I handed it to my sister on a silver platter. I shut my eyes to keep the tears away.
"Miss Dane," the receptionist calls out, "please step to the front desk."
I snap my head up. Slip my hands from Derek's. Their sudden coldness makes me tuck them under my armpits. I stand, nervous. Never liked being called by my last name. It's always bad news.
At the window, a woman seated in a low chair points to a laser projection, red against the white counter. At first, I don't know what she's asking of me. That is, until I see the dollar sign. Avon's first hospital bill. The first of many.
I pull the cash Callum gave me earlier out from my bra and slide it across to the woman.
There goes the money that was supposed to get Avon and me through till the end of the month, when I get my stipend. If I get my stipend. Who knows? The chief might suspend my contract if the sample I gave him turns out to be a viable source of fresh water. The doors swing open, and Callum, Dr. Corey, strides through, a white mask dangling from his neck. I look for signs of what he's about to tell me, and straight away I notice his hands. They're tucked into the pockets of his lab coat, in a comfortable, relaxed, good news sort of way. "How is she?" I blurt, leaving the counter to join him.
"Don't say coma. Don't say coma. Please don't."
She's awake, but the growth, it needs to be removed, quickly. "That can even be done?" I ask. "I'll find a way to cover it. However I have to, I'll find a way. It's risky, but it's your only option."
"And it'll fix her?"
Callum pauses. "It's a patch. And that's provided she doesn't bleed out on the table. If successful, however, she could live another year, depending on how fast the tumor grows back. HBNC-related growths have a 100% return rate. But they sometimes return more aggressively than they did at primary onset. She could live a year. She could also live a month. Or less." Boy doesn't mince words. Last question. The one I need to ask, though the answer changes nothing. "How much will it cost us?" I hold my breath and wait for an answer. When Callum finds my eyes again, something like guilt catches in his expression. "I don't know, but I'd like to try talking to some people. I might be able to do something for you. No promises, of course." Is he saying he can get her the surgery for free? Is that what he's saying? I don't feel comfortable outright asking. Always said I'm no one's charity case. But for Avon, I'd eat my pride. I'd take whatever they're willing to offer. Gotta wonder why he'd stick his neck out, though, for a roof rat like me. "Avon's surgery has been scheduled for tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., he continues. "You can see her in a few moments, if you like. The nurse will be with you shortly to assist from here on in." "Oh, yes." Callum takes me by the elbow, leads me out of earshot of the others. "Two things. First, a reminder, do not offer my real name to anyone," he says, then eyes the name tag pinned to his coat. "I've been working under the Blues radar for about 6 months now, and I'd like to keep it that way." The whys come back. There's so much I want to know. But now's not the time. So I just say, "Sure, Dr. Corey." And I keep the questions to myself. I'm going to get some answers from him. Just don't know how. Yet. "Also," the doctor says, checking his cuff comm for the time, from his lab coat pocket, he pulls out a shiny, fancy pen. I can't help but wince, watching as he tears off the corner of yet another envelope and writes something on it. When he's done, he holds up the piece of paper and pushes it into my fist. "They can tap the cuff comm they gave you too easily." In a low voice, "Avon was very sick before tonight, wasn't she?" And then, his face a mixture of distress and hope, he whispers, "You found it," and watches me for my answer. I drop my chin the slightest bit, meeting his eyes. For a moment, our gazes are locked. I nod. "Find me." "I can help her," he insists, his tone soft, desperate almost. "And bring a sample. It's the only way." "But I don't have a sample. I gave it to Chief." "I think we got to your sister just in time." One last pleading look, and Callum tips his chin, much the same as I've seen the Derbys do, but with respect. First to Tear, then Derek, and me last. Once more, he looks at me, before heading down the corridor. Still turned from the others, I look at the piece of paper, then stuff it into my bra for safekeeping. It's his address.
We got to your sister just in time.
A gentle reminder that without his help, she might be dead. But then a voice, small and angry and irrational, gnaws at my mind. Without his help, I never would have found the water or given it to Avon in the first place. The fault is just as much his as it is mine. I walk back to Derek and Tare, chewing on my lip, suddenly full of anger. Not at myself anymore, though. Now it's toward Callum. If he'd never found me, or lied about being with the Blues.
It's just so weird, Terrence comments. She seemed fine. Did you change your meds or anything?
Sitting down, I cradle my head in my hands. His question rings in my mind. The guilt comes back. Tidal. For a few measly seconds, I'd been able to forget it. Put it on someone else. But I'm glad it's back. Because that sort of thing is too big, too important to forget. Or deny. Even for a second. I should feel it. The sick, gut-twisting knife of my stupidity. I should feel it over and over and over again. And I should make it right. I gave her the water. I'm responsible for making sure she gets better. Which means she needs to have the surgery. I can pay for the surgery with the extra Callum promised. Not hiding his suspicion. What did that guy hand you? Derek asks. Dr. Corey handed me the names of some herbs I can pick up on Mad Ave to help her with the pain. It could be true. Herbs ain't offered in hospitals, but that don't mean they won't help her. Pricey, though, like anything grown in soil. Derek looks down at his cuffcom, like he's reading a message. Then he stands up, face drawn and grave.
Brack. I'm so sorry, Ren. I just got a call from a friend. I have to be somewhere.
You're serious? I ask, stunned. A friend? I swallow, knowing full well what that means. Her. He can't leave. He can't. If there's one thing he could do to make every feeling I've ever had for him die a quick, early death, it would be this.
Yeah, man, Tara says. Stay. We should be seeing Avon any minute.
Almost on cue, the double doors open. A woman in white calls my name while reading from a clipboard.
Look, we're headed in now. Let's go.
Tare rises to his feet. I search Derek's face, as though I might find out what could be so important that it would take him away, at this hour, from here. And for me, a hurt, wishful part of myself adds. But his face is no better than stone, hard, without expression.
I'm sorry. It's an emergency.
Derek pleads, looking at me.
Please, tell Avon I hope she feels better.
Ren,
I'm sorry.
I am.
I'll come back with you tomorrow.
Promise. He backs away from us, then turns and quickens his pace out the hospital doors. I stand, and Tara and I watch as Derek practically races away. We exchange looks, shocked, confused looks, and without a word, follow the nurse. Chapter 17, 12:30 a.m., Sunday. My insides turn to water when I see her. I'm going to be sick. Tubes snake around Avon's body, laid out too still on the small hospital bed. A curtain divides the room. Bluish lights buzz overhead. And the smell. It's the smell of dying. Of people waiting to die. That alone shakes me. You have 5 minutes with her. The nurse speaks to us like Avon's not even here. It's a good thing you were able to bring her so quickly. This is the most aggressively growing tumor I've ever seen. Between the time she was admitted up until about 30 minutes ago, its diameter increased a full 6 millimeters. Seems to have slowed now, though, which bodes well. I've never seen anything like it. She shakes her head, and looking over her glasses, adds, Dr. Corey said this is primary onset?
Primary onset. Callum said that she wasn't sick before tonight? Must not have wanted to raise any questions, like what she was doing in a club with a baseball-sized tumor pressed up against her skull.
Yes, I lie. No reason to change the story and raise even more eyebrows. And her situation is already strange enough.
Ren,
Avon moans from her bed. With a nod, the nurse makes for the door. 5 minutes, she reminds us, which makes me want to throw a dart at her face. Tara and I walk to opposite sides of her bed.
Shh,
I say, and I take Avon's hand in mine.
Don't talk.
You don't need to talk anyway. We've got Ren in the room,
Tara jokes, trying to lighten the mood. He hasn't seen her in years, but it doesn't seem like it matters. His shoulders are hunched, tense. He looks nearly as anxious as I do. Though Avon's chest rises and falls like it should, I can see that the air tank at her side is doing all the work. Her eyes stay closed, but I hope against hope she can hear me again, that her mind's clearer than it was back in the transport sub.
I'm sorry we fought,
she says. Pale blonde lashes flutter, and she opens her eyes slightly, tilts her head in my direction.
Forgive me?
The question undoes me. Tomorrow they're going to cut her open, and she might die, and she's asking forgiveness? That hard lump I'd been fighting off for the last hour finally breaks its hold.
Don't lose it, I tell myself.
If she sees how worried you are, she might not want the surgery. Too bad there's no pep talk in the world I could give myself right now that would do any good. I push my palms into my eyes, find water there, and choke on a sob I can't hold back.
There's nothing to forgive, silly,
I sniff, my nose suddenly crying too.
We're sisters. Sisters fight. That's like half the fun. We should celebrate, actually. I think that was our first fight ever. It's finally official. Really, we should get a certificate of authenticity or something.
I laugh and wipe away the salty wet from my cheeks. Avon giggles, then stops, because it makes her breathing too hard. I smile, kiss her forehead. She always liked my sense of humor. If there's anything I've ever been good at, it's making her laugh.
They're going to make you better tomorrow,
I tell her.
I'm nervous.
Don't be, Feathers.
The woman in white returns, owning the place in just a few steps. Time for meds, she crows. Which means it's time for you two to be off. This is the critical care unit. She raises an eyebrow and taps her cuff comb.
No way, it's only been 5 minutes, lady. Just a few more, please.
I try to leave the edge out of my voice. This woman is a gatekeeper. I should be buttering her up, but right now I'm just no good at faking nice.
Visiting hours have been over since 11. You only got those 5 minutes because Dr. Corey said it'd be good for the patient, the nurse says, not budging. Besides, this one needs her rest, what with her surgery tomorrow.
She prepares a dose of some liquid that looks like it's going to get fed through one of the dozens of tubes Avon's hooked up to. When the nurse sees her slight crinkle of fear, she says lightly,
3 injections, one for the inflammation, one to help her sleep, and one's a pain reliever. All good things.
All those meds.
Within seconds, Avon zonked out.
When can I come back?
I ask, still holding her hand. Like I said, this is the critical care unit, so visiting hours are limited. If she stabilizes, you can see her more often, she says without answering my question.
So when can I come back?
Right before her surgery tomorrow, if you like.
The nurse steers us through the room and out the door, her hand on each of our backs.
Now off you go.
Tare's Omni barely sways as he brings her dockside. Drive you home? He offers. Standing over it, ever the good guy. I didn't notice just how snazzy the carrot was before, being half dead and all. But now I do,
Fancy pants nav system? Auto stabilizing props? I nod my thanks and climb in, sinking back into the red leather interior.
The racks? He asks.
I swallow my surprise. Didn't think Tare knew the racks existed, much less where they're located. He's never been. I've never invited him. Though we were both in the orphanage, once he landed himself a rich dad, we grew up very differently. Doubt his pops would have wanted him hanging round the racks, and no doubt Tare would have felt mighty out of place there, too.
Mad Ave is fine, actually. I can walk home from there.
I answer, thinking of the address in my bra. Callum's place is right off the main drag. I know he said he could only help if I brought a sample, but I have to try.
Just want to pick up a bite to eat, I add.
Hare grumbles and pats his belly. Jealous.
I'm jealous, too. I'm jealous of the lie I just told.
My stomach tightens, but I know it'll be a while before I can get my hands on some grub. As Tare steers the mobile east, through the gutterway, I let my mind wander for distractions, watching the underwater city as it rolls tape. History, right in front of us. Deep in the silty, muddy canal, we see just the torso of a sculpture. One of his arms holds up what I think is supposed to be fire because he's just stolen it. That's how the story goes, at least. Supposedly we could brush him down and he'd be gold underneath. I never believed it. Then, when I look around again, we've hit Mad Ave.
Stop here, if you would,
I tell Terence. I want to ask if he's planning on visiting tomorrow, but I don't. Don't want him to feel obligated or nothing. Tare gazes wistfully out at the boardwalk. Eat some dumplings for me, will ya? I'd totally come with if I weren't positive that my dad's been having a 2-hour heart attack, wondering where I've been. I laugh, but I can't help wondering what that'd be like, having someone at home worrying about me. The one person wondering where I am is lying in a hospital bed. It'd be nice, though.
Maybe.
Nah. The word parents sours in my head almost as soon as I think it. Better off without. Can't be worrying about any more people dying on me.
Extra on the grease, just for you, I say with a short wave, wishing I were telling the truth.
The roof clicks closed, and Tare smiles his goodbye, and the Omni spins out along the canal. As it disappears into the dull, graying morning, I glance at the address, now wrinkled and scrappy. 51 Rough Block and Mad Ave, number 1A. Callum Pace. He may have lied, but he also saved my sister. I have to trust in him, for Avon's sake, much as I don't like it. Chapter 18. 2 a.m., Sunday. 51 Rough Block and Mad Ave. Prime location, right off the most popular boardwalk east of Central Bay. Prime apartment number, too. 1A? First floor. No walking up any stairs, or across any suspension bridges. Sea-level apartments have use of the narrows, planked sidewalks for first-floor tenants, so they don't step out onto water and all. The walk is maze-free, as most of the vendors are sleeping, but in a few hours they'll all be selling hotcakes and oatmeal. My mouth can practically taste it. I'm so hungry. Thirsty, too. When I see Rough Block, though, I can push aside the wanting. I turn left into the gutterway, where the only sounds come from the groaning narrows underfoot. At 51, I knock. Loud. I'm not going for quiet. Callum's probably sleeping, and I want him to hear me. A few more knocks, but no one comes. I can't help but examine the padlock. Maybe he's not even here. The cuff comm at my wrist reminds me that we don't have much time. 3 hours before Chief gets to Quad 9. I need to know if Callum can do anything for Avon. Otherwise, I'm not about to go switching teams. Making enemies with the DI ain't on my to-do list. But if it'll help Avon. In which case, Callum won't mind if I have a look around. Get some answers on my own. Most apartments use the same standard type of lock, as the original keys for the knobs got lost. First I tug, making sure he hasn't left it unlocked, which he hasn't. Not surprised at that. He's a West Isle boy. Probably thinks the whole of the ward is crawling with criminals. Which it ain't. Just some of the ward. I pull out that paperclip he used for the money and fold it up so that the loops make a T. If he's as desperate for this information as I think he is, I doubt he'll hold a little lock-picking against me, not with what I've got to tell him. Then I take off one boot and use the edge to push the steel wire together. Sliding my foot back into the boot, still snug from its earlier dunking, I push the new and improved paperclip-turned-lock-pick into the padlock. After some jiggling around, the lock pops open, and I walk right in. The room is dark. It feels empty. When I flip the light switch, nothing happens. He did say he was trying to stay off the grid. Soon my eyes adjust, and I cross the apartment toward what looks like blackout curtains. I throw them open, letting just enough light from the walk-in so that I can see, and I turn around. The walls. They must be under there somewhere, but I can't see them. Every inch of space is covered with topographical maps, not just of the city today, but of the city under the water, Manhattan. Pictures, too, from over the years. Black and whites of the skyscrapers, only three of which I recognize. The Empire Clock, the Slant, the Chrysler. Color photos in neons, the buildings lit in ways I've never seen, like electric three-tiered cakes, each frosted in fluorescence. Awful waste of energy. But imagine racing with those lights on. Damn. It'd be like running at light speed, intergalactic travel here on Earth. Brain-buzzed with just the idea of it, I scan the rest of the walls, distracted. A photo catches my eye. It's me. Age 13, scrawny, no build, no muscles, barely even the beloved ass that follows me around everywhere. The good old days. Hair wild as ever, though, and the same freckled, dusky skin. Black eyes. The picture is 3 years old, taken right before I got netted, before I offered to work for them, and Avon found her way to a sick house. Looking at it feels slimy, like he's been watching me. I understand why Callum has this photo. While he was working with the Blues, he must have taken it from my file so he'd know who to approach. Far as I know, I'm the only mole in town scouting for fresh. The others, whoever they are, keep tabs on potentially contagious citizens who could be spreading the disease around. Still, this picture reminds me that Callum's in this for his own reasons as well. Looking at it unnerves me, so I tug the picture from its tack and shove it into my boot. He don't need it anymore, and I want it back. Where is he? As I look around, it occurs to me that there isn't even a bed. There must be another room. I can't find another door, though, with every square inch covered in paper. I step backward. My calf hits something. Something heavy. I feel it tip over with a dull thump. And when I spin around, I see a cloth laundry bag open on the floor. But there aren't clothes inside. Articles, spilling out, everywhere. They're each enveloped in see-through film, probably for protection. I pick one up, the one that looks the oldest. Through the film, I can see the yellowed paper, its edges rippled from water stains. Says it's from 1940. Minetta Brook gone for good? No sign of the brook in a decade. The Minetta Brook, which only a decade ago reappeared in Lower and Mid-Manhattan, seems to have gone underground for good. The spring, once called Devil's Water by the natives for its poor taste and foul smell, plagued Lower Manhattanites in 1930. It is hard to believe that Dutch settlers would have fought over such filth with other freshwater sources in the vicinity. Originally, though, the Minetta water seemed pure. It was only found to have a sulfuric odor after flowing to the surface. Local surveyor Diedrich Hoff noted. Thankfully, the fountain in the lobby of 33 Washington Square West is no longer plagued, and perhaps, we may all say, good riddance. I place the article back in the cloth bag and consider this Minetta Brook. Is that what Callum thinks I've found? The location is off. That's not the quadrant he had me survey, but in DI training I did learn there were once whole rivers flowing underground, covering miles. But that was years ago, even before the washout contaminated the reservoirs. Even if I found the Mineta, it can't explain what happened to Avon, or me. When I touch the gash on my temple, all I feel is the thin raised flesh of a scar. It's healed entirely. Avon, meanwhile, is worse. From a far corner, a door creaks open. That's gotta be Callum. I need to move, hide, get the hell out of Dodge. But all I got time for is stooping behind the work table. I see you, he shouts, with more force than I would have expected. I have a gun. Show yourself. Sure enough, from my vantage under his desk, I see he's got his finger on the trigger of a semi-automatic, and here I am, a sitting pigeon. I have no choice. Both hands up, I grumble, fine, and back away from his desk. Hi, I wave. What the hell are you doing here? He asks, understandably peeved, but he lays the gun on the table. Lost in the neighborhood? I offer. You did give me this. I wave the envelope corner like it's a white flag of surrender. Remember? You don't just go, he blusters, looking for the right word, barging into people's places of residence. That's quite insane, you know. I step in front of the moonlit windowpane. Sorry, just thought you'd want to hear from me sooner rather than later. Yes, yes, of course, he says, and his face lights up, not hiding his excitement. I'll get the extra. He fumbles with the lock of a drawer hidden away beneath a small table. From it, he pulls out yet another thick white envelope, which he holds in the air for me to take. I reach for the envelope. I found a freshwater spring, I admit. Soon as I hear Callum laugh his disbelief, though, I stop myself from saying more. What about the blues? Working with Callum changes everything. Working with Callum means working against the blues. I'm their mole. Means I keep on getting that monthly paycheck, money Avon and I need now more than ever. If anyone at the DI finds out I'm working against them, I'll be at their mercy. Not a good place to be, as they have none. Miss Nail's words echo in my head from years ago, when she told me to keep my immunity a secret. But there's another voice in my head, one that, despite everything, hopes against hope. 'Cause that's what hope is, belief against the odds. If Callum can cure her, really, truly cure her, for good, it's a risk worth taking. I pull back my hand, ignoring the envelope for a moment, and make sure Callum's looking at me. Avon, you said you could help Avon. After a pause, he says, yes, I believe I can. You also said you needed a sample. Without it, there's not much I can do, I'm afraid. I glance down to the time on my cuffcom again. I don't have it. Chief Dunn paid me an unexpected visit, and I told him what I'd found. He's headed for the site in 3 hours, with a whole team. Callum sits down on the floor, bites at his thumbnail. I was afraid of that happening, he mumbles. Hey, you're the one who claimed you were with the DI, I say. He just shoots me a look, thinks for a moment. We have time, though. You could take me there, to the site. Tell me what you can do for Avon. I want to know who you are and why I should trust you. And then, maybe I'll take you. I've got a lot at stake, you know. Been relying on my income from the blues for quite a while. Callum looks down, solemn. I understand. I do. He taps his fingers on the table, like he's weighing options I can only guess at. But how do I know I can trust you? You work for DI, after all. I work for whoever can help me help Avon. If that's you, I shrug. Callum gestures to a chair. All right, take a seat. Shaking my head, I lower myself onto the floor instead and cross my legs. I'm more used to sitting this way. Chairs make me uncomfortable. My name, my birth name, is Callum Pace. I was part of the Blues Young Scientists curriculum. You've heard of it? I shake my head. A program headed up by Governor Voss. With the blight spreading, he needed more doctors, so he created an accelerated program for promising youths. Some of us examined geological surveys, theorizing the locations of underground freshwater. Others, though, my group, we were studying the HBNC virus and looking for a cure. Ambitious for a bunch of... Wait, how old are you? I was 17. This was less than a year ago. A little young to have the fate of an entire city's health resting in your hands, don't you think? It occurs to me that I'm a dragster, working for the government, looking for fresh. Not much different. The DI likes hiring them young, I suppose. Cheap labor. Callum waves his hands. Oh no, we weren't the only ones working on it, though I am proud to say that I was doing some of their most promising work, he says, beaming a bit. That's why the higher-ups gave me superior security clearance. I overheard some of the in-house gossip. One scrap was about you, a girl scouting for fresh in the ward. A couple of times I overheard my boss's bosses, the chiefs, joking about the governor, how he was hoping that moles like you, who worked for the Blues, would actually find a real live fountain of youth. He even says it with a laugh, like he knows how daft it sounds. I raise one eyebrow, even though it almost makes sense. Not the youth part, or the part where Avon's tumor grew back 6 millimeters in an hour, but my cuts. And earlier in the night, her tumor was almost gone. And people believed him? Well, no. That was the point. The search for fresh water was the perfect cover. But you believed him, I point out. I didn't. Not until this... He bounces, literally bounces over to a small wooden writing desk in the corner and opens a drawer, one that's hidden underneath the tabletop, using a key from his pocket. He hands me a small glass vial with no more than a drop of greenish liquid in it. Was given to me. By whom? I don't know. I found it in my DI locker during my time there. My locked locker, mind you. With this article wrapped around it and Q9 written on the back. I take the vial in one hand and the clipping in the other, careful not to press too hard. The paper is so old, just pushing down will crack it. I hold it up to the light. New York, Saturday, June 2048. Modern-day Ponce or modern-day Ponzi? To some, medical student Harlan Voss's findings could be the next step in the biomedical frontier. To others, he is the product of a culture desperate for youth above all else. 27-year-old Voss claims to have found the fountain of youth, but without the benefit of proof on his side, his discovery has been met with equal shares of skepticism and hope. One man discovered penicillin, did he not? Mr. Voss asks disbelievers. According to the modern Ponce de Leon, the storm surge that preceded what has come to be known as the washout caused tides to run so low they resurrected the Mineta Spring, which once ran through lower Manhattan. After March's meteor collided with the Antarctic's Pine Island Glacier and high-temperature gases were released, causing a global rise in sea level, Voss was unable to locate the source of the spring. I went back with diving gear, he stated during the interview, but someone had been there. It wasn't even a spring anymore, just rubble and mud. Now, Voss is looking for the spring, but there's a catch. He needs your money. Two things stand out. One, 2048, about 60 years ago. And two, our governor's last name is Voss. It could be a relative, Callum suggests. Or, and I know this sounds crazy, but what if they're the same? What if he found the spring and kept enough to keep him alive for a while? I look for similarities in their faces, but it's hard to tell. The governor is older, but both have prickly, cactus-like eyebrows and faces that would make a baby cry. Let me guess, I say, examining the liquid. You're going to tell me this stuff is magic in a bottle. Or the devil in a bottle, given what it did to Avon. Not magic, he answers. Science. Under the microscope, that stuff looked fairly incredible.
Incredible how?
There wasn't enough to run a sufficient number of tests that would yield anything conclusive, but it clearly had a regenerative effect on the human cellular structure.
Okay. So the water is unusual. But why all the secrecy? Why go searching for it behind the back of the DI? Why pretend you're still with them?
I thought that you'd be more likely to agree to the search if it came as a direct request from the DI, had I known about your sister's condition. Callum's gaze suddenly turned serious. And as for the secrecy, what do you think would happen if the government got their hands on something this big? Waving my hands, I spout the obvious.
Oh, I don't know. How about use it to cure the virus that's killing off the ward's citizens left and right?
You're naive, he mutters, replacing the vial and the article in the drawer before taking out a core, a shiny rainbowy disc no bigger than my thumbnail. I want to argue. No way am I naive, not these days. But I get the feeling he's about to prove me wrong. He draws the curtains closed, darkening the room. He slips the disc into a slot in his cuff comm. After reading that article, I conducted some of my own research. I figured if Voss needed money for a search party, he was probably advertising. This is what I found. An image projects onto the door behind us. The audio is weak. Cuffcoms don't have the best speakers, but it's easy enough to see it's a commercial. Scratchy background music plays, while three kids hold hands and spin together. As they go round, they age. Slow at first, then faster. Older and older they get. Their whirling makes me dizzy. When they're too old to keep on spinning like that, the image slows. A man's voice. For too long we have accepted one single fact. Humans age. Graphics morphing software lifts layers of wrinkles from the woman's faces like old-school time-lapse photography in reverse. Another voiceover. What if aging were just another disease? A disease that could be cured. With your money, we can enter a new frontier. One that is ageless. Timeless. Buy eternity today. Sell eternity tomorrow. The image dissipates like someone tossing pixelated sand grains into the air. They'd sell it, Callum whispers. It would go to the highest bidder. Just like Upstate did with their freshwater aquifers. They used to share them with us, back when we were all one state. Especially now, with all the animosity certain West Isle radicals have against the ward's sick population. You think they'd want to share something this big? What are you talking about? What animosity? Callum looks at me like he wishes he hadn't said anything. You don't know. No, I answer. Most people here don't have electric. West Isle news is hard to come by. We've got radios, but then we have to trade for the batteries. I don't add that we never hear them say much interesting anyway. At its most elemental, it's prejudice. They're calling the sick. He pauses, then says the next word like it tastes bad in his mouth. Subhuman. My sister? Subhuman. I want to curse at him, though I know he's just the messenger. But the more I hear about people on the West Isle, the happier I am that I grew up here, of all places. So as I was saying, Callum continues, if something like that were to exist, we'd never see a drop. What's more, the face of this planet would be forever changed. Think of the repercussions, overpopulation, an even greater strain on the Earth's resources. We're already suffering for water as it is. Callum lowers down onto the floor, sits himself directly across from me. Immortality is an entirely unsustainable concept. I'm quiet. There's so much to take in, so much that goes against everything I knew to be true. Callum doesn't look at me, lost in his own head. After a few moments, so you see, whatever you found out there, it's imperative that the wrong people never have access to it. But if Governor Voss is one of the wrong people, I have to wonder, who are the right people? What exactly do you want with it? I ask. I don't want to cure death, that's for sure. I'm a scientist, Ren. I believe that something like this, whatever it is, could have huge potential in the medical sphere. I'd like to examine the water, alter base components, make it stronger. Ideally, I'd like to use it to develop a drug therapy and eradicate the HBNC virus, but I can't work with nothing. The ball's in my court. Like I said, I found fresh water, a hot spring, but I don't know anything about this fountain of youth you're talking about. Just tell me what you found. Everything. I inhale, and I start with Plan B bunking out on me. I tell him how I had to swim into a building with a big red star, how the place should have been flooded but wasn't, and how under an abandoned subway tunnel I fell into a pool of water that didn't leave me thirsty. And then I tell him how it tasted. He laughs, almost in awe, mumbles, "Unbelievable," but says nothing more. I get to the part where I gave Avon the water, and for a few hours she was symptom-free, better than symptom-free, until she collapsed on the floor of the tank, the grand finale. The memory physically hurts. Retelling it is reliving it, and the corners of my eyes prickle with salt water. So if the fresh is responsible for fixing Avon, it's also responsible for making her sicker. How do you explain that? I only have theories. Nothing certain until I have an actual sample. What if I didn't find your miracle spring? He grunts, and I can almost see the thoughts clicking into place, the mechanics of his mind landing on an answer. There's only one way of finding out. Had a feeling he'd say that. Chapter 19. 2:45 a.m., Sunday. Just as we're about to step out into the tar-black night, Callum stops, runs back inside the apartment. Returning, he throws me something small and says, "In case you need to reach me." I catch it, a cuff comm. Latching it next to my DI-issued one, I realize they look identical. I hold the comm close, inspect its sides, flip it open and everything, but I can't see a difference. It's DI-issued as well, Callum tells me, noticing. I snagged it before I left and made it untraceable. I look at the comm with a nod and make a mental note to ask Callum about that falling out he mentioned. Not one bit do I like the sight of the two side by side on my wrist. My nerves get all jittery. Then we're out the door again, each carrying one empty rubber sack. The narrows creak the whole half block it takes to reach Mad Ave, but not far down the boardwalk, I see his mobile, docked and waiting. Callum tugs at the rope, drawing it in. "You got an Omni?" I ask, awed. "Of course I do." Under my breath, I mumble, "Of course he does, silly me." "And you're driving." I do a double take as Callum passes me his keys. "You just don't do that. Offer the keys to your mobile? An Omni, no less? Sure, I'm known, but still." Whistling, I run my finger along the sleek, purple paint job. The wheels that allow for driving on land are tucked inside the body, under the surface. She looks just like a bullet, but with a glass roof, swankier than tears. "Let's get a move on," Callum mutters anxiously, rubbing the nape of his neck, like he's reconsidering getting in with me. "They'll station people there once the freshwater find has been confirmed. We have to move fast, or we lose our shot entirely." "I'm on it," I say, not liking his tone, but knowing he's right. If Chief Dunn sends the surveillance team early, bad news. Don't know how we'd get out of that one. I push a grooved button on the key, and a soft click follows. The roof lifts, revealing two black leather seats, one for the driver, one for a back passenger. Wonder how she goes from water to land. With a classy ride like this, it shouldn't be too hard to learn. You probably just think the word wheels and they electromagnetically grow out of its bum, ready for riding. We both hop into our respective seats. I click the button on the key again, folding the roof back over our heads. The Omni pressurizes, and my ears crackle. "This is one good piece of metal, Doc," I comment, nodding in approval. "Never know when a floodable airlock might prove useful." Behind Callum's seat in the back is a tiny space where you can enter directly into the water without sinking the boat. Could you stop calling me Doc, please? Polite words. Sharp voice. Not sure what gives. That's what you are, though, right? I fire up the obviously not old girl, and she sways side to side, sending bubbles round the edges. Now might be a good time to mention that I've never actually driven a fully water-adaptable mobile, which is less like driving a car and more like steering a boat. Nah, he'd only get nervous. I jam on the acceleration, and the Omni jerks forward. Callum groans. It's a pitiful sound that makes me turn to face him. When I do, he shoos me away and points to the mobile's nose. I shrug and keep driving. It takes a few erratic lurches before I'm able to get the hang of this whole underwater acceleration thing.
I'm going to be sick, Callum says as I shift the gears and bring us underwater.
Better not. I turn around to face him again, all the while he's going more and more interesting shades of seaweed. You're the doctor, remember? He shakes his head and points again.
Eyes, front.
Looking out at the wide expanse of the channel, I realize I don't know where I am. It's a different city down here, full of furry, fuzzy edges. I tap the dashboard screen, hoping there's no actual button. It beeps a few times, and then a neon grid lines the black background. Quad 9, I say aloud, feeling mighty foolish, like I'm talking to myself. But then, bingo. Green lines mark the way through the rubble to our destination, like an antique etch-a-sketch. I set out, steering us as fast as I can. But with each turn, the Omni jolts. It's difficult, following the navigation screen while rushing. After a few moments of silence, I turn around to see Callum curled up with his head hanging between his legs.
Are you really getting sick?
Submarine travel. It hasn't agreed with me since I was a child.
You were fine in the transport sub earlier.
My mind was occupied, and there were no windows.
What have windows got to do with it?